You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving get up a second on. Thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good weekend where you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping to that this crazy weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, you know, it may not be. But and if you can stay in and chill out, do so. But if you have to, and it has to get done, it must get done, it will get done because of you. That's why we appreciate you. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Also, too, you can go to the shortcut, which is whatever search engine that you use, and then put in babaoshi.net, BABAOSHI.net. And once again, those programs will be right there for you. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I'm going to give it all times are Eastern times. I'm going to give you the other programs we have here on African Perspectives. This evening at 8 o'clock, from 8 until, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9, Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Two programs that have debuted, Our Story, Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story, Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And then Pinckney to Pinckney, Sunday from 5 to 6, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday. Activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Two new programs we have. Check them out. And those are the only programs we have here on Time for an Awakening so far, unfortunately. But hopefully, once again, we'll grow again like it was when I first came on this program. On this platform, it was a lot. And of course,
this call may be recorded or transcribed.
And I brought some with me as well, you know. So, yeah. Okay, what am I doing now? That's what I want to do. I want to say other programming like disaster awareness for community preparedness. My good brother Yusuf Muhammad, and that's disaster awareness for community preparedness on Blog Talk Radio. On Blog Talk Radio every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. From 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. You can Give him a call at 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness this evening from 4 to 6. Yep. It'll tell you what's going on at weather-wise and what you can do. Because I tell you this, they got a bomb cyclone out west. And they got flooding that's going to be happening in the east and in the south. And in the southwest, who knows? Man, dry as a bone. Yeah. We're going to read from the Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. November 21st. An African ancestor is not everybody that dies. An African ancestor is not everybody that dies. An ancestor is everybody that lived a worthy life and then died, is recognized. There are people who died in certain villages whose name is forbidden to ever be called ever again because of the way they lived. But there are those whose name one should always want to invoke and remember because of their thoughts and their deeds, because of the way they lived. Professor James Small. We study our ancestors to identify ourselves because we are our ancestors. We did not know them. We do not know, and we do not know ourselves. It is this knowing which allows us to understand the depth of the war we are engaged in with the invaders of our people's spiritual, mental, and physical space. So, the African warrior thinks, speaks, and acts in the tradition of our ancestors, fully aware of where we are and why we are here. They believe in the ingenuity, humility, resiliency, integrity, and the truth of our ancestors. They believe in the inviolability and incomparability of African people and the African person. They have an intimate awareness of what and why our ancestors' wisdom, beliefs, material creations, institutions, interpretations of reality, the cosmology, and relationship with others. All this they possess because of an undeniable, unbreakable identification with our ancestors. The knowledge that we are our ancestors is enough to know that their traditions are ours. Their traditions are ours. We respect ourselves when and only when we accept our ancestors. We are our ancestors. We are ourselves when and only when we think and act in the spirit and in the way of our African ancestors. I say, affirm, I am worthy of my ancestors. Affirm, I am worthy of my ancestors. November 22nd, power is organized energy or effort. Success is the development of that power with which to get what is rightfully ours. Calvin Robinson, Redmond Battle, and Edward Robinson. Power and influence are different, very different. No matter how measured, influence is not power. It is a function of power. Without the perceived potential threat of enforcement through an exercise of retaliatory power, influence is meaningless and, in fact, laughable. In the European cultural context, influence without the perception of a significant power base can easily be totally ignored. Nevertheless, those without the ability to imagining process real, effectual power see influence as their most precious and useful tool. And in an effort to be seen as being somebody, they are most susceptible to the misidentification of influence as power. But again, having influence is very different from possessing power. Influence is not power. No matter how much of it you have, it is influence. It advises the powerful at the powerful's discretion. It advises the powerful at the powerful's discretion. Influence can be ignored at the whim of the powerful. Influence is dependent on the goodwill of those you try to convince to change their ways. Power is the ability to have your will pursued
regardless of what others want. It is self-interest and self-determining. Others comply with your will because they fear your retaliation, honor your wisdom, and or mutually respect for your space. Specifically, in the case of those who aspire to oppress, the presence of your power would be recognized because your threat has been spoken in a language that can clearly be understood. And your interpretation of what they are capable of understanding is grounded in how they move to exercise power. Affirm, my energy is organized toward our empowerment. Affirm, my energy is organized towards our empowerment. Dr. Wade Nobles, I believe that his definition of power, I think, was most definitive that I learned over some 30-something years ago, maybe even a little longer. Some people say that power, and I'm breaking here because I do have another date. You know, I read Friday, I read Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of the Inyasa Sim, so I do have another date to read, but I want to interject this while we're on it. He said, power is the ability to define reality. Then he further states that power is the ability to define reality and then have others accept your reality as if it's their own. Now, the Caucasian define reality. And unfortunately, we have accepted their reality as if it's our own. And the question that we need to ask ourselves, even to this present day, who are we in Europeans, in Yorugus, in Yorugu's reality? Who are we? Well, first, we were the soulless people when they came into Africa, determining that we had no culture to speak of. It's justifying our captivity, justifying the brutality, the murder, the extermination, the thievery, then sending us in those halls of ship, the coffer lines, marching us through whatever to get to the coast. Get to the west coast of Ghana and Nigeria and Senegal and so forth, the places that you have heard, like, you know, Gori Island, Cape Coast, and Elmina Dungeon, and many others. And in those, packed in those little rooms for days, and then put on ships, chained, packed in like sardines. A trip that lasts 90 days. The horror. Then when you got to this hemisphere, whether it was in North America, the Caribbean, Central America, or South America, all of it was the same. Varying degrees of inhumanity. Power is the ability to define reality. And we need to define reality and shape it and fashion it in our image and in our interest, because the European defined reality. And his reality, we ain't right. We're the soulless people. Then we became no fit fathers and no fit mothers, and the scourge, the drug addicts, the drug dealers, fit for imprisonment, fit for extermination. You know? Sorry about that, family. Yeah. No, I'm telling you. This is what we have to do. That's why I'm on this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with the same message of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. The motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. November 23rd. Neither brutal assaults nor cruel mistreatment nor torture has ever led me to beg for mercy, for I prefer to die with my head held high, unshakable faith, and the greatest confidence in the destiny of my country rather than to live in slavery and contempt for sacred principles. The Honorable Patrice Lumumba, Democratic Republic of the Congo. Patrice Lumumba, killed by the CIA, by this government. Spirit is the home of sacred principles. It is where warriors find their greatest strength. There is no meaningful disconnect between what they know we need to be and stand for and the divinity out of which all righteousness originates. Spirit is Ma'at. Spirit is Ma'at. When it comes to Ma'at, when it comes to the liberation, empowerment, and sovereignty of African people, for the warrior there is only truth and lie. No gray areas exist, only truth and lie. And unless those choose to turn their backs, conceal the divinity within from their own eyes, and act against truth, they will always be known what needs to be said and done. Spirit and mind are one for warriors. Spirit not only brings them into awareness of our origins and the humanity, it also connects them with their personal responsibility to help rebuilding the African world. Disconnected from spirit, warriors become frightened, other-directed individuals, fraught with the same psychopathic apprehensions about themselves as their destroyers. They find themselves being drawn deeper and deeper into a downward spiraling abyss of spiritless Eurasian. This is an ugly place for warriors. It is a place from which they must remain distant. Align their minds with the sacred principles of our ancestors, articulated so well, makes this an impossible for those who know that they are African. Affirm, I beg no enemy for mercy. Affirm, I beg no enemy for mercy. We are an African people. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sisim of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah. Today is Friday. It's Friday. Wow, wow, wow. Thank God it's Friday. Yeah. Friday. It's interesting, the day of Friday depends upon. It's not like any other day to me, especially if you, even when you're a kid, that last day when you're going to get out of school that day and have Saturday and Sunday, you know. Speaking of which, on this day in 1963, November 22nd, on a Friday, I remember it. It's just like one of those things that you remember, the day, the time, and things you were doing, and the day that you found out about something horrific, and this was the assassination of JFK. It was on a Friday. It was on a Friday. The next day, that Thursday, when they had Lee Harvey Oswald walking through the corridor, I was watching it on that little black and white TV we had, and Jack Ruby pulled out a gun as he was walking by and confronted him and shot him, killed him. And of course, Jack Ruby, who was a gangster, I'm not sure if he was a gangster in the Dallas area, or but he had cancer. He was about to die anyway. Yeah. November 22nd. And of course, all kinds of things. You know, they had, he was in the book suppository room, seventh floor, I believe it was, when he shot him. But as you can see by the videotape, he went back and forth, so there was another shooter. Yeah. November 22nd. Let me clear this up, too, for you family. Yesterday we were talking, and I wanted to mention something about a documentary, not like a movie, with James Earl Jones in it, who's narrating. They show him. He's a photographer in the movie. And this is about the Haitian Revolution, you know. It's called The Feast of All Saints. The Feast of All Saints. So if you can get that. And it begins with the killing of the French you know, the brothers and sisters who had, who followed Duty Bookman. And Bookman said, throw away the white man's God and you will be free. He didn't say you could. He didn't say you might. He didn't say you shall. No. He said, throw away the white man's God and you will be free. They got the French off their backs, off their necks. And many of the mulattoes, those who would have sided with the French, who were happy to have French blood in them, those light skin. I'm like Malcolm. I have no racist. Although my father, I never knew my father. I have a picture of my father, you know. And he was an entertainer. He identified with being black, I guess, because he was an entertainer. He was a ventriloquist. And he had a little black dummy named JoJo. Billie Holiday and JoJo. His name was Billy Williams. Called himself Billie Holiday and JoJo. And my mother hooked up with him. He was on that Chitlin' circuit, you know. He coming through Milwaukee, Chicago. He's out of Chicago, maybe St. Louis, and so forth. But anyway, yeah. And so I never thought myself as special in Ohio, ass kid with curly hair, you know, whooping my ass for that. I mean, damn. That's why I had to learn how to box. For real, you know. Cass was jumping me and my brother. So, but, you know, no, I'm African. I'm African. Because as Africans, we span the spectrum of light, bright, and damn near white to blue-black. We do. Yeah. So check out, and what was happening yesterday, as I was constantly trying to get it, and I got it, when the program was over, went to the bathroom. I thought, damn. Brother Kwaku said, yeah. I said, yeah, I guess I was clearing my mind. But yeah, Feast of All Saints. I kept coming up with Exterminate the Brutes, which is a very good documentary. Exterminate All the Brutes. Exterminate All the Brutes. That was on, I think it was on HBO. Yes. Exterminate All the Brutes. That came out the same time that I was promoting a couple of years ago. The documentary I'll always promote, of course, is Great Pyramid K 2019. Great Pyramid K 2019. And I mean, it's long, yes. Just chop it up if you can't sit for 3.5 hours. I understand that. But all of it is good. It explains, I believe, in a rational sense, who built the pyramids and how they were built. And it gives credence and credit to us as Africans that civilization was ours. And that is what we did. Yeah. So, I guess I'm in a reading mood. I'm going to do some reading. In the identity, the Seeley, the Culture and Society in Person, Frontline Concepts in African-Centered Psychology, Baba Mwalimu Baruti, great book. I love this book, you know. There's a poem. I mean, it feels like I'm hiding that poem. Peerless. Peerless. We have been peerless from the dawn of our creation to the depths of our subjugation. From the coffers of our imagination, we've created civilizations that flow through our history to every corner of the world. We have been peerless in deciphering the language of the gods and using it to crack open the earth's every secret. And from that accumulated knowledge, we have created lifestyles that raised humanity to its highest heights, built edifices that defy decay, and written observations that have been challenged but never suppressed or never surpassed. We have been peerless, the first alchemists to convert the mundane into the sacred, the first parents to reproduce the most startling variations, the first species to be enthroned by melanin alone. We have been peerless in our tenacity to hold on to our humanity, while Caucasoid winds have sought to tear us apart. We have never left fear rewrite the songs rising up out of our hearts. In more ways we can ever explain, we remain the cream of the heavenly crop. We have been peerless. With our bodies, we have redefined physics. With our voices, we alter the course of sound. With our intellect, we have reprogrammed the world of thought. With our emotions, we have striked the ability to love. The wonders from our black minds and hands have been witnessed everywhere, but duplicated nowhere, because we have been from without and from within peerless. Lanny Makita, 9 September 2nd, 2021. Ashe, we are peerless. Worldview. Brothers and sisters, we need to create a worldview. I'm going to read from here and also from Dr. Bobby Wright's Psychopathic Racial Personality, nice little book on menticide. Menticide. How a people interpret the global reality is what is defined as their worldview. It is both the geocultural and socialized lens through which they look at the world in terms of what is appropriate and inappropriate thought and behavior for themselves and others. Equally important, it frames the value and worth that attach to them. Basically, it is the way a people interpret the world through the lens of their ethos, which determines their worldview. It is their outlook from their perspective has created from the unique conditions that mold them into the positions they hold in society or in this world. Human beings cannot function in chaos, and out of chaos of life, they create an ordered existence. The dominant theme or character of that order, worldview, will be a function of their collective ethos. Culture is ordered behavior. It is not created individually. All groups of people who have been historically related over long periods of time share a way of viewing the world and the realities in which it represents them. A worldview results from a shared cultural experience. It helps to form that experience. It presents us with a systematic set of ideas about many things. And its significance is profound, and it has far-reaching effects on those who share it. Its effects are perceptions of nature, of ourselves as human beings, of each other and our relationships to all beings. Worldview helps to inject meaning into life, to determine what are the meaningful experiences and events and which are not. A people's worldview affects and tends to determine their behavior. Within westernized psychology, worldview is mostly studied by looking at groups, organizations, institutions, class periods as in time. There is more social matter to assess here because this is where the most extensive and meaningful interaction can be found. We, as an intelligent beings, however, are in no position to analyze worldview except at the national level. In war, it does us so little good to assess enemies, one individual, organization, political party, class, time, period, or whatever, at this moment. We search for people's mentality, thinking politically, in addition to truly assessing worldview at the highest social micro level, at the level of people's requiring that we first answer the question of why Caucasians or you. Let me say this. I don't use black and white. I use African. I use Europeans or Caucasians or Yorugu, which I'll be using. Thank you. It requires us first to question why Yorugu are so devastatingly odd. We have to do with what is forbidden in a supremacy aspiring culture where the victims must remain the target of scientific study because they have been defined as the problem. We have no prepared for the assault against those who dare to challenge this victimization by identifying the true source, knowing that we will not just be attacked by oppressors. As Bobby Wright, that great ancestor, Dr. Bobby Wright, pointed out in his piece, Menticide, the ultimate threat to the African race. Wherever a victim begins to examine the predator, there is an automatic behavior on the part of other victims to question and attack the examiner's credentials, data, and competency. Let me read that again. Let me repeat that again if you don't understand. Whenever there is a victim, the victim, and we dare to examine the predator, the Caucasian, the Urugu, there is an automatic behavior on the part of other victims to question the attack of the examiner's credentials, data, and competency. We have to go further than superficial findings of oddity and ask far more telling, geoculturally intimate, blameworthy questions of origin. And this might even cause more of those among us caught up in the rapture of menticidal disbelief to see that these human oddities, not us, are the foremost problem requiring an objective scientific analysis. If frontline Africans honestly do this work, we would undoubtedly discover that Urugu and not us are the problem which must be analyzed for fault and correction. We would have to begin searching for the true answer as to why their particularity is so disproportionately concentrated at the criminal and amoral and xenophobic, ethnocentric end of the spectrum of all possible worldviews. In an honest scientific search, we would find that Europeans hold a xenophobic and patently Eurocentric worldview. Their xenophobia has long been sociopathically and psychopathically practiced toward each other within their unnatural reality. And upon maturation, and since it has been precisely targeted against others everywhere they have found them. Everywhere they have found them. Look at the, it says as Malcolm, I don't know if you want to give this to Malcolm or give this to Elijah Muhammad, but it says, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history of Europeans. Look at the history when they came out the caves. Look at the history when they rose up in Greece and they rose up in Rome. Look at the history when they rose up again after in their medieval period, when the only light and information in the world was us, the Moors, in the western part of Europe. Look what they did when they had their so-called renaissance and going around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of. They didn't come to bargain. They didn't come to barter. They didn't come to trade. No, they came to take and kill and displace. There are many examples of genocide, real genocide. That shit that Netanyahu and them talking, they didn't experience no damn genocide. Murder, yes. Mass murder for sure. But it wasn't no genocide. The indigenous people here almost witnessed a genocide. In fact, one can make an argument that it was because there are certain nations that are no longer in existence. In European culture, the outlaw ideological thrust, the aggressive stance, is developed more intensely than any other culture. As we examine the culture, we find that it is dominant modes of expression rival at almost fanatically political or confrontationally some consciousness in which all cultural phenomena that are other or different are considered hostile to the group's interests. If they ain't them, other. Once again, the European, when he came out of that dark age and supposedly had this renaissance, they said to themselves, we may war amongst ourselves because we are very warlike people, but we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. We're going to come together and we going to subdue their ass, and we going to take their stuff. On the other hand, for Africans, we would observe a worthy xenophilia, sadistically tortured and exploited because of this tolerance and sympathetic proclivity toward maturity, needy and in needings of others. And that's what happened, family. Our worldview is different than their worldview. It's different. Now I'm going to read from Bobby Wright, Psychopathic Racial Personality, in the section on menticide. African suicide, lynching by any other name, is still lynching. One of the most difficult tasks of the African scholar is to analyze the influence of racism on African behavior and attitudes, and at the same time escape the almost irresistible protective barrier. The protective barrier of Western scholarship, the analysis of the victim. This analysis of the victim methodology, which involves seeing the victim as the cause of his or her own problems, has been a major scientific development of Yoruba scientists because it effectively leads away from the cause of African condition, which is white pathology, Yoruba pathology. As a result, some take the position that African masses should not be informed of our truly weak condition for fear of immobilization, a situation which already exists. We are immobilized. We ain't moving. Catatonic. Others deny that Yoruba have any power over us at all. The confusion is caused by the powerful yet subtle Yoruba concept of free will. Have free will. This concept insists that because people always have choices that they can be held responsible for their behavior. The author is fully aware of the danger in exposing the human personality to threatening emotional stimuli, which endangers its existence. However, there comes a time when the risk of exposure is insignificant when compared to the alternative. To paraphrase a mental health truth, the greatest pathology in the world is for people to believe in something just because they wish it to be so. Let me read that again. The greatest pathology in the world is for people to believe in something just because they wish it to be true. That's theology too, ain't it? Yes, it is, family. In the not-so-distant past, suicide in the American African or an African community was virtually non-existent. In fact, it considered all possibilities of life and death. Suicide for Africans was not an option. Further, all the additional reasons that have been projected as enhancing the suicide dynamic did not manifest themselves in our community. On the contrary, the conditions that produced the feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, and powerlessness which created havoc for Yoruba, seem to have strengthened the resolve of us who considered them part of our destiny. Therefore, suffering for Africans was and is a way of life, not death. It was out of this cultural imperative that the blues developed and is now being stolen by Caucasians, by crackers, by Yoruba, and revealed the incomparable soul of black folks. Centuries before whites or Caucasians discovered externalism, Africans has accepted, unfortunately, that to live is to suffer, and the ultimate test is the meaning a people find in that suffering, which dictates the way they live and die. This historical reality introduces the question, how could a people who in the worst of times endure now allegedly reflect one of the highest suicide rates in the United States? Africans and Yoruba scientists alike generally assume that additional research analysis can be applied to the alleged African suicide phenomenon in order to understand its dynamic. However, the most serious error an African scientist can make use is to utilize European definitions and analysis in attempting to understand and explain African phenomena. This is no denying the fact that they who have the power to define, rule, they are in control. And it's like their definitions. To remove any element of doubt, what is termed African suicide is generally deliberate African murder committed by Yorugu in the United States. Yorugu in the United States has achieved their special environment as postulated by Watson and Skinner. Therefore, they must be held accountable for the behavior of its inhabitants. Most behavioral scientists attest to the fact that situations can be contrived in a manner that will influence people to engage in self-destructive behavior. Further, the focus of attention shifts from victim to perpetrator, except where Africans are involved. Political brainwashing is a violation of the Geneva Convention rules for the treatment of prisoners of war. There is little doubt that a psychotherapist would be charged with a criminal act if they were determined that a patient, even one who had consented, had been encouraged to commit a self-destructive act which led to injury and death. Yet, the treatment of Africans in the United States is unparalleled in history, and Africans are subjugated to far more serious psychological attacks than those permitted with prisoners of war. Deliberately preventing a people from developing self-sustaining options and promoting conditions of self-destruction are acts of genocide. Therefore, African suicide is a method of genocide promoted and controlled worldwide by Yorugu. Consequently, there is no such phenomenon as African suicide when suicide is defined as willful and deliberate act of taking one's own life. Clearly, this is a non-traditional approach for examining African suicide. It is based on the following very simple premise. African suicide is a political dynamic. For political reasons, Africans are being programmed for self-destruction, and African suicide is one of the results. Lynching by any other name is still lynching. The method that has been developed and is now being implemented cannot be found in any of the literature or any research data, but in one of the greatest discoveries of psychology. The author has classified this process as menticide. Bobby Wright, he coined the phrase in 1976, menticide, which is defined as the deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind, with the ultimate objective being extermination of the group. For example, Africans acceptance of the concept of free will also absolve Caucasians of any responsibility of their victim's condition. In fact, Caucasians, European, Yorugu, have developed an effective defense mechanism, the guilt of the victim. It is so effective that their victims accept their plight as being God's will. Menticide is a worldwide phenomenon being implemented against the entire African people. Therefore, Africans in on the continent begin to manifest the behavior of Africans in this country. Also, it is clear that there is a direct correlation between the level of Yorugu involvement and control of African institutions and African self-destruction. This analysis should not be surprising to anyone who has studied European history and is familiar with the European objective of world domination. Menticide was developed to combat the rising level of consciousness and African nationalism, which threatened the progress of European world domination. Approximately 55 years ago, a Caucasian professor of psychology at the University of Chicago proclaimed this to the world. Give me a dozen healthy infants, well informed in my own specific world to bring them up in, and I'll guarantee to take any one of them at random and train them to become any type of specialist. I might select a doctor, a lawyer, artist, merchant, chef, and yes, beggar man, thief, regardless of his talents and tendencies and abilities and vocations. the culture of this, of his ancestors, in regards to the race or the culture of his ancestors. Watson, and that was dated 1924, 100 years ago. What is properly called behavior modification is a highly complex science which is underrated and generally ignored by African behavioral science. Yet, any African with a cursory knowledge of B.F. Skinner's experimental analysis of behavior should recognize its potential danger in our community where every situation is under the control of Caucasians. It also clearly defines that African community is still enslaved. The prophecy of B.F. Skinner, 1971, in Beyond Freedom and Dignity is now a reality. Skinner articulated that it is possible to dilute people into believing that they have the essence of life, freedom, and dignity, and still control them. Give the illusion that they have freedom and dignity and still control them. There cannot be an analysis of African suicide using traditional Yoruba techniques because to do so would assume the inherent equality between us and them. Such an analysis ignores the prevention of opportunity, options, and control by Africans over their own destiny. In fact, a critical analysis of even Caucasian suicide would raise serious questions concerning the validity of Durkheim's, the perpetual Caucasian god of suicide theory, Durkheim's basic premise that suicide rates for any given social area population varies inversely with the stability and durability of social relationships within the population. For example, the death of a U.S. soldier who threw himself on a grenade would be classified as altruistic suicide by Durkheim. The soldier would be considered a person who has lost his personal identity as a result of the group's authority becoming dominant. Therefore, he sacrificed his life for the group. Yet, the U.S. Army does not treat or identify a soldier who commits such an act as suicide. On the contrary, he considers a hero and given the highest honors. However, kamikaze Japanese pilots who crashed their planes into American ships is considered crazy and suicidal. Further, scientists then propose and receive research grants with the stated purpose of attempting to understand the Asian mind. In view of this discussion, the problem of so-called African suicide cannot be resolved at this time. To believe otherwise presupposes a sense of direction and level of power that does not exist in our community. This is not intended to imply that our situation is hopeless. No, by no means. Our solution is readily available. The creation of an African worldview through the development of an African social theory. Let me repeat. This is not intended to imply that our situation is hopeless, because it is not. The solution is a readily available creation of an African worldview through the development of an African social theory. A social theory determines the destiny of a people by establishing objectives and guidelines for their existence. It defines their relationships with other living things, values and rituals, methods of child rearing and education. The ultimate achievement of a social theory would be the reintegration of the African worldwide African culture. Numerous examples can be cited to demonstrate how Africans have attempted to resolve problems through a variety of efforts, only to end up in a weaker position. For example, the aftermath of the 60s, or our present condition, proves the importance of an African world theory. Africans in the 60s were divided along Caucasian social theoretical lines, only to end up with the same damn pre-60 choices. European capitalism or Marxism. Without an African social theory, we will continue to stumble through history. It is time for us to heed that profound African proverb: if you don't know where you are going, any road will get you there. African social theory will not only tell us where we're going, but will also explain what to expect once we achieve our goal. It will not be self-destruction. Ashe. The struggle will continue, and victory is certain. Dr. Bobby Wright. Ah, time for a break. Yes, yes. And we need a break. We come back from the break, open the phone lines up for questions and whatever it is you want to talk about. But I hope you want to talk about what I've just stated, because I think it's most appropriate. Yeah. We need to develop an African social theory, a worldview, you know. Today, our break, we're going to have a piece done by Bobby Humphrey, the sister who was a flautist. Somebody tell me why they call it a flautist instead of a flutist, you know, okay? But, you know, she's dynamic, and she was really hot back in the 80s, 70s. And this particular piece is interesting because while you'll hear it, and if you go to YouTube and see it, it kind of follows the documentary of Wattstack. And if anybody knows me, they know I love Wattstack. I had Brother Gerald Thompson, who's in the documentary, one of the people who's still living, is in the documentary. I saw him when I was in L.A. last year at Brother Brent Burton's retirement party, and it was great to see him and sit down and talk with him. Yeah. I talk to him periodically, and yeah, the anniversary, whenever it comes up, always, man, Wattstack. And it's a dynamic documentary. Yep. So let me go to the piece here. Yeah. And we can get this party started, right? Okay, family. Yeah. So we're gonna play the piece, and then when we come back, we'll take questions, comments, or concerns. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on TimeForAnAwakening.com, and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
It's beautiful, that's what it is.
It's a hell of a feeling.
I think it's beautiful. Like, shit, the whole thing is going on, you know.
It's great, what can I tell you?
That's right, brothers and sisters, it was beautiful. That's right. Watt Stack. Yeah, it happened 1972. Was the concert itself. And the documentary came out a year later. Azteca was a 1972 benefit concert and documentary that celebrated the American African community and the music of the era. The concert took place on August 20th, 1972 at the LA Coliseum. It was organized by Stack Records in Memphis to commemorate the 7th anniversary of the 1965 Watts Riot, 7 years later. The concert featured performances by many of Stack's artists, including the Staple Singers, Isaac Hayes, Johnny Taylor. The concert was billed as The Living Word, a soulful expression of the Black experience. The documentary, The Concert, was filmed by David Wappler and directed by Mel Stewart, his brother. The 1970 documentary, Watt Stack, was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Documentary in 1974. The film includes interviews and footage of the concert, as well as discussions with African people, American African people, and about issues of the day. In 2020, the Library of Congress selected the film for preservation in the United States National Film Registry. The significance, WASTAC was the largest gathering of American Africans in one place since the 63 March on Washington. It was an attempt to demonstrate positive ways for the community to move forward. Brothers and sisters, Watt Stack. Let me, this is a little bit here. Let me play this. Hold on here, family. Since we're talking about it. Yeah. Now, things don't want to act right, you know. I hate when that happens, don't you? I swear I do. To be fine with that. Okay. Oh, okay. We'll do this one then.
Oh, help me, I'll take you there. Oh, oh, Yeah, Watts Tack family, love it, definitely. Have my good friend, Brother Gerald Thompson, on again in the future as that Watts Tack anniversary happens. But for me, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the documentary. I've seen it so many times. And, you know, many of the artists, in fact, Dramatics, my favorite group, they were a part of Watts Tack, but they didn't participate in L.A. because they were overseas, but they played one of the opening songs. You know, what you see is what you get, you know, when you're looking around of L.A. But it also have scenes of Chicago in it, New York, not just L.A. Just a dynamic and very positive, lot of love, a lot of brothers and sisters together. It's a different time, you know. Today, man, they'd probably be showing men and women. I mean, you know, women and women and men, you know, that kind of. But. If you can, go online once again to YouTube and you can check out the whole documentary, Watts Tack. When Stack Records out of Memphis came over to L.A. to celebrate and commemorate what had happened 7 years before. Let's get back to what's happening, family, and give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We talked about worldview and the African worldview and establishing an African worldview. We also talk about, when we don't have it, the menticide that we experience. And Bobby Wright has stated that what we need to develop is an African social theory which established that African worldview. That's what we need. That's what we need, family. Determine things for ourselves. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah. So hit star twice if you're in there. You want to have something to say or give questions, comments, or concerns. See a few in the queue. I'm not going to open up for you. Open up for yourself. You know what to do. And because I'll continue to stay here and run my mouth, you know. Because I tell you, it's vitally important for us that we develop that we develop things for ourselves. There's no doubt about it, family. And it seems that the European grip on our minds has been more fortified. Urugu's grip has been more fortified in the last few years. And my belief and contention is that I don't think that we can do anything about that but just say, hey, you go ahead, you know. Because if you have embraced that so deeply, that to me, if you want to sabotage what we got going on, we should kill your ass. That's no, really. Yeah. Traitors. If you ain't got nothing nice to say, don't say a damn thing. And you don't know nothing. You don't know nothing anyway. In fact, to me, in your conscious mind, or definitely in your subconscious mind, you should be proud of the fact that we're doing something for ourselves on our own. And we ain't asking the Urugu, the Caucasian, the cracker, the white man for a damn thing. We're doing it on our own. Oh, we're going to come back to get him once we are firmly established. Because believe me, we deserve reciprocity. But look at how bad we have suffered. We deserve it. So reparations is definitely on the table. Not the reparations that they be talking about here, trying to get some money here, you know, to, you know, further stimulate the economy of this. No, we're talking about reparations in terms of repair. That's what reparations mean. And we need to repair ourselves, repair our institutions, develop institutions through reparations. I ain't talking about you getting some money now. You got a nice car now and some nice clothes and some jewelry and you moved out of the ghetto. No, I ain't talking about that. I understand there are some families and they have been
in poverty for generations. They have suffered through all the welfare systems and so forth, and living where they've been living in Chicago and Baltimore and Atlanta and Milwaukee, you know, and so forth. I understand that, and I feel that. But I don't care about individuals. I care about us collectively as a people, and we need to get ourselves up out of this. It's just like my grandson told me about the young man who is going to diss USC for Colorado, for Deion Sanders. He got a name, image, and likeness. 7 figures. I think it's damn near $10 million. That's why I don't like it. I don't want it for individuals. This should be about finding a collective way that when people are recruited by schools and they play for that school, those you know cats who are on the big name schools in basketball and football specifically, and their starters and so forth, there's a scale, and they get paid, or they get money set aside for when they graduated, and they don't need to take any classes because they are consumed with practice and travel. Let them do that for 4 years. The eligibility runs out. Now you can go ahead or take the education when you feel it's more beneficial for you. If it's 2 years after that, three or whatever it is. And maybe you have a son or a daughter that it should be transferred to them for what you have provided that university. You know, for because some of these young people, they had networking and on the, you know, all on Facebook and all on this and that, man. You know, yeah, my grandson told me that. I was like, wow, $10 million. I mean, I know that some of them were getting 6 figures. You know, I didn't know 7, maybe 8. Brother Irv, good afternoon. Brother Irv, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Baboshi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm listening to what you're saying. I saw the Sax record, Stax record documentary, which was awesome.
Isn't it?
Which
I
actually,
love it.
Oh, it I was just it. Amazing. It and when you know the songs and you can sing along
oh,
with
yeah.
them. And wait a minute, the brothers and sisters looked, I guess the word is ethnic. They were Afro. Come
oh,
on,
yeah.
brother.
Oh, they, yeah. Yeah, this is
they,
72,
they
man.
Didn't, mm-hmm. And the thing was, the brothers and sisters didn't look like they were trying to assimilate.
Right. Oh,
or
no.
Or trying to. No, we're not trying to blend in with these crackers. We're trying to let these crackers know that we have our own identity.
That's
we
right.
come from something. We have knowledge of self.
Yeah.
We have a history, not his story, our story.
That's right.
And a lot of us know where we come from. And so what I believe happened because how we got to the place where we are now, where we're a hodgepodge of cultures is what we are. We don't have a homeland. We don't have a hairstyle. We don't have a language. We actually have a blue-eyed Jesus that was given to us.
Yeah, we all because, over the place.
And that's
huh?
come on, we everywhere and we're nowhere at the same time. And what this is right now is a manifestation of that seed that was planted back then
yeah.
to eliminate that. We want you to be American. And by being American, we need you to strip yourself of all other cultures that you may think you are, that you may think you're a part of. Because once you realize that you are from African descent, that you are a proud American African, Jamaican African, New England African, wherever you are, Africa's in you.
That's right.
And when you realize that, then you look at these other cultures and say, well, can they match up to us? Can you put them beside an African culture and have anything that makes any sense? Or did you come from Africa?
Mm-hmm.
Did your culture come go to Timbuktu to learn about our psychology and life and all these things that were taught in Africa to these travelers? because that's what happened. People went there to learn. Africans were so knowledgeable about the stars, about the gods, and all these things. And but yet, when Urugu comes, all of a sudden, American Africans, Africans, period, we become savages.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are savages. Your women have no clothes on. Their breasts are out, and they're running around. But what are they doing now? You look at TV, I can see the whole top of a woman's breast when I look at television. The breasts are sitting out like a booty on a chest. They're so big. Come on now.
Yeah,
but yet when you go to Africa, they have no clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
And this country has come to a place where the more scantily dressed you are, the better, the more you, the, what they say, sex sales. And they think that's something to be proud of. So the people, the models are getting younger and younger, and that's all right. That's all right. So your pedophilism is showing, Clinton. Your pedophilism is showing when American Africans try to imitate. They try to imitate Urugu.
Mm-hmm.
That's all P. Diddy's doing.
Mm.
He's imitating something he saw someone else do. And they're bragging that they can, oh, I got all the women. And that's something to brag about? That's something to be proud of? That you're able to be with all these women and whatever disease she got, you got, and he got, and we all got it together. This does not even make sense, Baba Oshie. They tell you one thing.
Yeah, that's why I love that. That's why I love that documentary, because it shows African love. They show men and women embracing and talking and holding hands.
Children.
Yeah, it's great.
Children.
Man. It's such a great documentary, an expression of African love, an expression of African love. It's just great.
And that's a beautiful thing, brother, because the man, woman, and the child is what the African love is based on. And you can bring your children to the show. When do you can bring your children and your mama and daddy to the show?
Mm-hmm.
Come on now. We look like other cultures. You know, the Mexicans move as a group. The Chinese people move as a group. The Japanese move as mama, daddy, grandmama, all of them move as a group. They move as one. They move as a collective.
Mm-hmm.
And we move by ourselves. We put our children out at 18. We can't.
Yeah.
You can't stay. I got 5 bedrooms, but you can't stay here. You got to get out on your own. And I'm teaching you to be on your own. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, kick them out the house.
We kick them out because our parents kicked us out.
Mm-hmm.
And their parents kicked them out. But see, Baba Oshie, the reason for putting the child out your house back then wasn't because they didn't love their children. They were trying to teach them something. It was what there was no room. You had back then. They had 10 kids, you know, because they still had children the way they had them on the farm. You had children to work. You need some to work the farm, so you had a bunch of kids.
Right.
But and now I believe I could be wrong that it bled over for a lot of other reasons. Also, it bled over into this urban life when we migrated. And we still had a bunch of kids, but there was no room for you.
Mm-hmm.
Your room, you were sleeping 3-4 to, I slept 3-2 beds, and 3 of us slept in the same room, one bathroom, 7 people in the house. Come on now.
Yeah.
So, when you got older, you had to leave. There was no room for you. There was one coming up. Mama was pregnant again.
Yeah.
You know, so this is the life. But as we've stayed in this country and tried our best to assimilate with Urugu, I think we're realizing, like W.E.B. Du Bois realized, that these people are never going to accept you.
Not
under the conditions.
Never.
Not under the conditions that they set for us.
Never.
They're never going to accept you as an equal. The playing field will never be leveled. You can see that from the president.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
He showed you that you have to come to this country and you can have 10 cents in a suitcase and be anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, Obama, keep selling that pipe dream to these people. If that's not true, and the individualism is something that Elliot plays on his show, where he talks about Ossie Davis talks about black white people saying that we've made it, and they always point to Lena Horne or Sidney Poitier, or these individuals.
Yeah, some
but
entertainers.
They never point to the group. Why is it when you talk about Chinese or Asian people, you point to the group that's smart? You know, those Asians are smart. All of them? Yeah, because you talk about them in a group. But when you talk about black, American Africans, you talk about them individually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Beyonce got money. Tyler Perry doing good. T.D. Jakes seems to be doing good. why aren't you saying those American Africans are doing good? Because we don't move as a collective. And when we do move that, there we got the saboteurs who want to sabotage. And, you know, I'm in here to make sure Massa Money is safe. I'm watching Massa Money. That's what you're doing. You're making sure that nobody puts a bad light on my Massa, you know, because he takes care of me. And the reason I'm doing much better than you is because Massa likes me because I look out for him when he's not. And I'm going to go back and tell him, like the guy said, and I'm going to stop after this. He said, I'm not celebrating Thanksgiving. He said, I'll celebrate Thanksgiving when you celebrate Nat Turner's rebellion. Because Nat Turner went out and killed 60 white people because they were murderers. They were thieves. They were rapists. They were in bed with little children. They were enslaved, trying to enslave people. He said, and so in Thanksgiving, we're celebrating the way you murdered these Native Americans.
Yeah.
You're celebrating the fact that that you slaughtered them, that you killed their food source, and you're celebrating the fact that you took their land and killed them.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to eat and thank God. What are we thanking God for? Thank God they're gone. Thank God we took their land. Wait a minute. Who the hell is we, Baba Oshie? What are you American Africans celebrating? Did y'all take the land? Where's it at? We didn't get it. So the point I'm making is we're celebrating a holiday or holidays that you don't understand.
Yeah.
That you have not done your research. You've listened to someone tell you hearsay or what they believe. Oh, you know, we got to get some cranberry sauce and some. These are things that we've done without asking why. And once you ask why, then you start to feel like, man, I've really been doing something that just doesn't resonate with me. It doesn't seem like anything but a commercial act. Because now it's commercial, Baba Oshie.
Oh,
it ain't about,
yeah,
about
well,
what
always
you
has
but
been,
it ain't
for
about,
sure. Always
come
has
on,
been.
It's not about what you make for somebody, it's what you buy for somebody.
Yeah, because they're always it's always determined by the money that is being made at the grocery store, being made by the airlines and the transportation and the gas, so forth, because that's what it's about. Once again, stimulating the economy. Yes, because even in its initial, even in its history, I'll never forget being at the firehouse reading a supplement that was in the evening paper in Milwaukee. It was a supplement, and it talked about the original Thanksgiving. It talked about, you know, how they planned to have this massacre of these people when they knew that the men were out hunting, and they vamped on that. I think it was it's a northeastern. I know the Pequots. Now, wasn't the Pequots? It was another cultural group that they vamped on and killed them. You know, ravaged that group, and that's the history. You know, and what the people who were indigenous welcomed them on the shore, welcomed them within the land, supported them, helped them get through some bad winters, you know, helped show them how to grow food, particularly corn and so forth. And that has been the case. They come in smiling, and then, you know, they did that. The Greeks did that in Kemet, you know, in other parts of Africa. That's what they do. It is part of how they are. They coming in slick. You know, just like they said, man, you know, they told us about Jesus and so forth and the Bible, you know, taught us how to pray, to close our eyes and put our hands together and gave us the Bible. We opened our eyes. We had the Bible, but they had the land. They got the land. So, yeah, man. We still got the Bible with no land. Shit.
Yeah. No, we're laughing, Baba Oshie, but the reality is you asked the American African farmers about the land and how they taken it from them, eminent domain from them, finagled them out of it legally, and all the land that American Africans had. But see, Rugu understands that land is power.
Yeah, but also, too.
Land is power.
It is, but what happens here is that there is eminent domain. The Caucasian yep. owns and has taken all of the land. You got to pay taxes mm-hmm. on it. You know,
that's
yeah,
right.
You say this is your land. Yeah, you kind of bought it, but you got to pay taxes on it. Don't pay the taxes on it and see what happens. It should uh-huh. be confiscated, uh-huh. you know,
because
it is it really your land? Can you say this is my land and I'm going to declare myself self-sufficient? I'm going to and sovereign. Can I put a well on my land and grow my own food and put up a windmill for electricity? I'm just, you know, I'm off the grid. I ain't buying shit from y'all. No, you can't. You know?
No, you can't.
No.
No, you can't.
So, yeah.
You're absolutely correct. The way Urugu has this set up is the way Urugu will never, ever lose control over American Africans in this system that we live
right.
under.
Exactly.
The system of racism, white supremacy is yes. exactly what it is.
Yes.
But so what has to happen is we have to uninstall the system and load a new system in. We have to... The Republic of New Africa, the African thought, the African mindset,
yeah.
the history of our people. Our ancestors left us a roadmap. Our ancestors left us instructions. Our ancestors left us everything we need to go where we need to go as a people. All we have to do is not believe in the fear that Urugu perpetuates.
Yeah.
See, Urugu works off of fear, Baba mm-hmm. Oshi. Mm-hmm. Ain't no white man ever came and smacked me in my face, put no gun to my head, other than the police pulling out guns and all that foolishness. But regular white folks that you see, they don't approach you mm-hmm. because they understand that the system is on their side.
Right, it's there.
They don't have
sure.
to. It's their system.
Yeah.
If you and me go to court right now and a white boy standing there, the judge going to look at the white boy and go, what they do to you? Huh?
Yeah.
See, because the system is already I don't like to quote idiots, but I'm going to quote one.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump said the game is rigged.
Yeah.
It wasn't rigged. We didn't understand when he said that.
Mm-hmm.
He was upset, so mad, because he was supposed to win last time. He wasn't supposed to lose. Now that the thing done went the way it's supposed to go, this man won by a landslide. And
that's crazy, man.
I don't even discuss politics.
Yeah.
Because Baba Oshi, just as you and I I'm talking right now, we're talking about what Trump did, what Trump didn't do. There's some black folks sitting there going, I'm so glad Trump is here.
Yeah.
Because people have different opinions.
Well, after this 4 years, but, you won't be saying that, believe me.
I thought Reagan was bad. Then I thought Bush was bad. Then I thought, what's that other one? Nixon was bad, because I was young when Nixon was in.
Mm-hmm.
But now we are, as American Africans, we all should be numb to these white folks. We should be able to go on about our fight, our revolution, our sovereignty, our self-determination, without even looking at what these white folks are doing. Because the reality is, they're going to do what they're going to do, but
you broke up on me, brother Irv. You broke up on me, brother. Finish your.
Get you to leave.
Okay.
We got new Negroes now.
Yeah.
And if we don't do that, and if we don't realize that we're in a fight, Baba Oshi.
Okay.
You don't have to keep a guy in prison if he doesn't realize he's in prison.
Right.
And I think that's where we are.
Well, that's just like what Carter G. Woodson said. You bet, bro. I appreciate you. Just like what Carter G. Woodson said, if you can render a man an outcast, he'll be an outcast. You keep sending him to the back door, he'll go to the back door. Even when there is no back door, he'll cut one for his own benefit because he has been trained to do so. Good afternoon, Brother Jay. How you doing?
What's popping? Oh, what's going on with you today, my good brother?
I'm doing well, brother. I'm doing well.
Hey, listen, you said the proverbial thing. In 4 years, the Negro, they're going to find out.
Yeah.
Because this is about to get
oh, about to
crazy.
Get ugly. It's about to get ugly, man. This shit is
crazy. And the sad thing is, that Negro king, some of them know it, mm-hmm. and some of them are just in a total mental panic because of the simple fact. We talk a good game, but unfortunately, we're not organized to deal with what's to come. I ask black people all the time, what do we have in place for the 50,000 black people and the government workers that's about to lose their job? What do we have in place to address that situation? And hum-da. But everybody wanted to talk about this Negro Jeffries and the rest of them and the slick talking, you know, females in the Congress and all of that. But the realization is, what are you going to do for our people? Where are we as a people going to be protected at? When are we going to stop and settle ourselves down and come together collectively on one thing? Let's say that black people want to come together to save Obamacare. Let's say black people want to come together and save Social Security. Mm-hmm. You got to be in a position to punish this devil.
Well, see, and what you're saying too, Joe, Jay, is that if we come together to do that, we're doing that for everybody. That's just not specific.
That's not specific.
No. You know?
It's not for us.
I mean, you know, I think I mentioned it the other day about Social Security when Bush took out some $1 trillion loan out of Social Security and never paid the shit back. Okay?
Yes, he did.
You're damn right he did. It's documented. You know, so and Social Security
is tax shortage.
Social Security is not an entitlement.
They won't even go from 142,000 a year up to, let's say, $1 billion or just earned income or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not investments, not all that other stuff, but just on earned income. Mm-hmm. The reality is this: a lot of these crackers gonna learn now, because there are more white folks on food stamps, mm-hmm. Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and other social programs mm-hmm. than there are blacks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the system is geared towards, this may be a good thing if we could just get our heads together and just deal on superficial things, mm-hmm. like why are there no more pensions? Why there's no situation to where, as we went from having certain things to them now being taken away? Why are you allowing these crackers to play this DEI game on you? Mm-hmm. With every game that this country's made in the last 60 years, these bastards are basically systematically taking it away. Mm-hmm. And people are just, it's okay because of the simple facts. White folks don't have no problem with it because of the longest the Negro ain't getting nothing, I'll suffer. What kind of sick mentality is that?
Let me say this.
What kind of sick mentality is that?
But it is who they are. It is what Urugu is.
I know that.
That's who they are. And it's evil. And that's who they are. They're going to continue to do, especially now because of this election of Trump, which, of course, every day I'm looking at it seems more like a scam, more like a fraud, more like a take than ever before. There should have been
no way.
Could be
like 9/11.
Yeah. But I mean, and
because if you think about it, they're now saying that certain things were done by who I do not understand at all is in the position that he's in to have the influence on this country the way that Elon Musk is. I don't understand it, because there's no place in the world that a foreigner could go and have mm-hmm. that much influence
right.
in another man's country. There's
one of the things, he's from South Africa. He's from a place where they dog us out just like they dogged us out everywhere else, you know, and even more so. It's been studied because South Africa studied how they treated us, you know, with the separation of apartheid.
The man is not supposed to have the right nor the authority to be in the situation that he is in to have the type of influence that he's having, and nobody's saying anything about it.
He's got the money. He's got the money. In fact, two people stood to lose real big if this election didn't go the way that it did. That's him and Trump. Him losing millions, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars, and Trump going to prison. And so, therefore, you see them winning the way they did. There's no way. You got to me, Jay, the piece that Rachel Maddow put out is damaging to me. When she said that this man, and she got it on record, she got the film and so forth, where Trump is saying, I don't need your votes. Don't you have to come to vote. He said this on Thursday before Tuesday was the election. He said on that Thursday, you don't need to vote. I got all the votes I need. You don't have to come to vote. When every damn news company was saying, this election is too close to call. What if the election is too damn close to call? Then you should be saying, I need your vote. We must get on. No, he didn't say that. He said, I don't need nobody's vote. I got all the votes I need. He said it at a forum, and he said it at on Fox and Friends and that kind of bullshit. He said it consistently. I don't need your votes. I'm only going to win. How is that possible? Well, it could be possible if Elon Musk's SpaceX maybe had somebody. I don't know, Jay. Only thing I know is Hold on, Jay. These son of a bitches haven't won a popular vote in decades. Why? Because the Republicans aren't popular. Their programs and so forth, 2025, all that shit. But yet, they won, and they won big. Like they so-called now have a mandate to do what he's doing. That's why he's putting all these clowns in position who have no, I mean, they always talk about us, right? And the DEA hired, they're unqualified. No, you son of a bitches aren't qualified. See?
I just would like to hear what Greg Palast has to say in regards to this, and he's been kind of quiet. I haven't heard anything media wise. I guess I'm gonna have to do a search on Google. But the reality,
who is this? What you saying, Greg? Who?
Greg Palast.
Okay, I'm not here. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, he's someone that is really heavy into this election fraud and all of that stuff. I would probably say he's one of the foremost authorities on it within the world. Okay. I mean, he's dealt with the whole situation of the last couple of elections and all of the stuff that was going on.
Okay.
But I haven't really heard anything. I'm surprised. You know, he hasn't been on, like, Democracy Now! Or something like that. But, I mean, you know, maybe somebody will have him on soon. I'm surprised. I don't know. Maybe he has had him on Tom Hartman or something like that. But, you know, it really boils down to, what are we going to do to survive the next 4 years? And then again, who knows? Maybe the 4 years won't be as bad as we think they would be.
Yeah,
you and I both know better than that.
That's,
I mean,
for sure. We're gonna suffer.
I think there's just certain things that will cause him more issues and problems if he tries to take away certain things. But I mean, on the whole, these white folks are too stupid to realize what's being done to them, and too naive and too racist to address it in the manner that it should. But it just goes to show you how effed up America is to even hire somebody to be the chief of the country or whatever. And then again, you gotta wonder what's gonna happen on the world stage. I mean,
Jay, it remains to be seen. Let me get another call. Got to come on, callers. It remains to be seen, my brother. You have a good weekend, Jay.
Hey, you have a better one.
All right, man. Peace, brother.
My brother.
Good afternoon.
Hey, you got to wonder what's going to
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Baba
hey,
Ochi.
Hey,
how
hey,
are
what's
you?
What's up? What's up? How you doing, Paul?
I'm alive and kicking, giving thanks to life, as always.
That's right. Keep on kicking, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, Baba. Baba Ochi, you said you made a statement earlier on, and I'd just like to readdress that if I have your permission.
Sure, please do. Please do.
Yeah. You said that you didn't know your father, and you talked about I was so enlightened about the things you mentioned about your father, and you know, I know we're talking about people's parents is always a personal thing, but you mentioned it, and I always think when people say that, I remember my dad came to this country with his father, but my grandfather, for the sake of a better word, was a little bit of a rebel, so he didn't stay with my dad. And my dad didn't really talk about his father that much, not progressively, mainly negatively. But one day I ran into my dad's uncle, my grandfather's
brother. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And he started to explain to me who my granddad was, from Jamaica. He told me that he was one of nine brothers, and they had first cousins who had nine brothers too. They didn't have no sisters, so there was 18 of them in that particular area, all brothers and cousins, first cousins, because two brothers married two sisters. So there was 18 of them in one area. They're very kind of physical type people. But he said to me, he went to America in the 50s. Late 40s, 50s. And when he came back, he was a very different person. I don't know what happened to him there. He said when he came back, he was a very different person. And
did he go to the usual place that Jamaicans in New York? Maybe
I don't know. I don't know that chapter, you know.
Okay,
I know he had a son there. I know that, which I found out. And I know that some of his brothers live there. I know that as well. But he didn't stay there. He came to England. But what one of the interesting things he told me, he said that when he came back from America, he was very changed. Mm. But I don't know much about his journey in America.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when he started to break him down, it reduced me to tears because it was the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he was speaking to me, I went into a type of daydream because I thought he was talking about me. It was almost when he was telling me about his life and some of the things he did and what he was involved in. It was all, I had to check myself because I thought he was talking about me. And it's almost, and then I realized when I left his house, when I left his house, I was such in a daze. I was just so, not confused, but I was just so mystified because I couldn't believe how much of how he represented me. The point I'm trying to make is, I learned from that point on how the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
No shame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also a few things. Sometimes I'd say things to my dad's older brother. We'd involve in conversations and he would say to me, that's exactly what my father used to say. Now, I didn't know him growing up. How is it possible that I could make statements and say exactly what my granddad said?
Yeah.
And my uncle would tell me that.
Right. Because of DNA.
And
yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what the point I'm trying to make is this, you know, when we say we don't know our father because we didn't have that physical contact, we got to remember that half of our father is us.
Is us. Ashe. I agree.
So I come back to the mirror thing, looking in the mirror, and I'm really going to champion that because that's the thing we don't do enough of.
Sure.
And We don't really look at ourselves long enough in the mirror, and we don't really study ourselves. We don't really get to know ourselves. A great deal of us don't really like what we see.
Right.
And that's why we don't do it. We don't want to face the truth about ourselves. And, you know, sometimes the truth is quite painful because it's not all progressive.
Right.
You understand?
And it is.
And that
history that goes with it, you know,
a life is a series of ups and downs, like a roller coaster. It's not like no damn box of chocolates. It's like a roller coaster or a series of ups and downs. And hopefully your downs are few and they're not as devastating. And your ups are consistent and fulfilling. And so if that's the case, then you look yourself in the mirror and you see yourself, you feel good about who you are. You feel good about your hair, your nose, your lips, about being who you are, about being African. You feel good about your community. You want to support that. Hopefully that's what you do when you look in the mirror. Because as Dr. Clark said, we have no friends. If you want a friend, you look in the mirror. But this time, Paul, when you look in the mirror, you like who you see as an African. You like your history, your culture. You like, you know, you like who you see as a man, you know. And you love to work with that. You want to work with that. As opposed to, yeah, I'm looking good, man. Shit, I got my nice new hairdo and, you know, all these clothes are cold. Yeah, and this jewelry is just bing blinging, you know. So, no, that's not that. Like who you see culturally. Like who you see culturally. Like who you see historically, you know. That's how I look at it when you look in the mirror.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's got to find their own groundings and their own roots. But the I tried. You said if the ups and downs here.
Yes.
And I see that like if like a heart monitor, like the heart monitor goes up, it mm-hmm. goes down. The problem is when it flatlines. When it flatlines, then you know that there's nothing left. But it's got to go up to come down. Sure. And the reality of it sure. is the downs are the lessons you learn to move up.
Yes.
And when you're up, you look down. Yep. And when you're down, you look up. So, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't matter. For me, it doesn't matter how many downs you have, because the reality is that if you're not learning from when you're down, yes. then there's no point in moving
right.
up.
Right, because if you're not, you'll stay down. You'll stay down,
right?
Because you have no incentive right. to move up.
If you're not learning from the whatever took you down, maybe it's a mistake, maybe it's just misfortune, whatever. If you don't learn from, if you don't take a lesson from those downs, then what's the point yeah. in moving up? Because yeah. you're just going to be at the same point in your
exactly.
in your mentality. But I'm just the point I'm trying to make is that when we get to know ourselves, we know who our ancestors, whether the parents are living or not. They are ancestors, and we have to come to terms with, you know, there's a lot of pain we're carrying. And that takes me to another thing, which was, I was listening to your and brother Seba, which is better known as Franklin Jones, yeah? Mm-hmm. Seba, the teacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was interesting. But, you know, I want to say this. Franklin pushes hard against... what he refers to as the slave syndrome. He don't agree with that at all. Well, for many years, I actually saw the slave syndrome. I wondered why we behaved in such a way. Mm-hmm. I did. You know, so many practices I questioned, you know, and a lot of people weren't questioning it because most people just go along to get along. That's right. What happens.
That's true.
Most of us, we just follow what we're told, what we're indoctrinated with. We call it tradition and all these sort of stuff, yeah? But it's really indoctrination. The reality of it is that we just follow. We just do what we're told. Look, the reality is when you look at the practices, right, these practices are enshrined in us. Joy DeGray wrote a book on that slave syndrome, and mm-hmm. that helped me a lot.
Okay.
When I listened to her theory, mm-hmm. because... I could now put a marker on it. I saw the behavior and I questioned it.
Sure.
I questioned a lot of things I was seeing from when I was a young person right to now. I'm still questioning a lot of the behavior. Mm. He gave me a door. Elder Herakuti told me that you go up a set of stairs, and when you get to the door, you find another set of stairs. What his point was is that learning never stops.
That's right.
It's infinite.
That's
you
right.
never stop learning.
That's right.
And the point, the person who thinks he knows it all is a fool. The person who thinks he has this idea that, oh, this is what's going to happen and nothing else can happen and that blah, is a fool, is mm-hmm. a total idiot. Because the reality is we are continually learning.
Right.
And what these devils are doing, they have hidden so much from us. even this, even the things we think we know about ourselves, a great deal of it is not even true. And it's going to be hard for us to know the truth.
Right.
We really have been lied to such an extent that we don't even realize who we are. So I agree with our brother on that. But what I don't agree with him, and Joy DeGruy talks another thing about epigenetics, right?
Right.
Do you understand what epigenetics
is?
Yes,
I do. Yes.
Right. So for those who don't understand what epigenetics is, scientists do a test with a rat. And what they do with the rat, they put the rat in the cage. So they might give it a sound. They let the rat eat food or whatever, a particular food it likes. Mm-hmm. And then what they do, they'll when that rat goes to eat the food, they make a particular sound. And then they shock the rat, electrical shock. Right. Now, when they test the offspring of the rat, they find that that the same behavior they've programmed into that rat, the offspring picks up on epigenetics, meaning that it's being passed through its genetics.
Exactly. It goes down to you into your DNA, and your offspring will respond in that way too. Listen, Brother Paul, I'm going to get one more caller here. Go ahead and make your point. I want to get another caller in here.
Yeah, so the point I'm trying to make is 400 years of trauma, torture, rape, murder, and barbaric treatment. Don't tell me that doesn't have an effect on those
damn
to come.
Right,
because that, to me, don't make no sense.
Yep. You're damn right it does. All right, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man. You have a good weekend, man.
Thank you.
All right. Peace. Hey, my sister. How you doing?
Oh, I'm blessed. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Enjoying the program.
Thank you.
And I was agreeing with Brother Paul about how great Franklin Jones was. Really, he had a lot of powerful insight.
Yeah.
And it was very powerful and enlightening. And
sure,
you know, he's speaking a lot of the truth of our situation. So I thought that was it was really great. So I just wanted to echo on that program. You know, so you had said about there was a landslide victory of Trump and things.
Well, that's what is being perceived.
That's being disputed, disputed.
That's what they're saying when you look
but
at
But others
the
are
numbers.
Not saying that, though, too. The others are saying that with the votes are still coming in and it's getting closer to closer. Especially about the popular vote, it may just be just a 1 or 2 percentage change differences, and the loss in those so-called blue states, that those were just she may have lost a lot of them, but they were by smaller points, and that so that was one aspect of it. And I do believe that election was stolen.
Yes,
just like
that's
the comments you were making about Elon Musk. What he was doing and what Russia was doing.
Sister Abia, that's the point I'm making. There's no way in hell There's no way in hell that Donald Trump won in such great numbers and took all of the battleground states and everything like that. Got 25% of the American African men that voted. 25% of the American African men that voted got almost damn near 50%. He got almost 50% of Latino men that voted, and of course all of the Caucasian women who voted for his ass.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because there's a lot of racism, and misogyny there, and the white women wanted to be with their man. You know, they'd rather go through all what they claim how important abortion was to them, but they'd rather go with their man. And I feel like the people that was voting for Trump, they just like as corrupt as he is, too.
Yeah.
But that election, they were still in that election, too. Like, I mean, they had bomb threats in Atlanta and other people. So you can lose, and they were in they was in like Atlanta and Cobb and the African areas, right? You hear about the bomb threats, you know, people was there and they had to leave. Who's going to come back, and it's a bomb threat.
Sure.
And they was burning the ballots. You heard about how they, they go to those ballot boxes and they were burning them up.
Yeah, there was a lot of voter suppression, so there's no doubt about it.
And purging. It was all a fraud, too.
Along
with other things.
To me, sister, the smoking gun, as far as I'm concerned, is what was stated by him.
Trump
is such an idiot.
He's so stupid. He always
He's such an idiot. You know, but But here it is for us to see that Thursday, prior or before, whatever word you want to use, to the election on that Tuesday. So that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, telling people, telling his people not to vote.
Don't vote.
Don't vote. I don't need your vote. I don't need your vote. I got all the votes I need. When every poll, supposedly, and all pundits are saying, this race is too close to call.
Close. Race is thin.
You know?
Yeah, it's such a fire. But, you know, and then the other thing, they did lose some bona fide votes with what was going on with the Palestinians because, Kamala wasn't handling it right. They was with old Genocide Joe.
Yeah.
And he's a problem now, too, because he is trying to get us into World War III. He's just a genocide person, sending, Russia giving Ukraine these bombs to go in and, shoot into Russia. And, Putin's talking about, look, I still got some nukes now. So Biden is just Genocide Joe.
All right, my sister.
And so we got to be looking out for that. I don't want my children going over there fighting for no Ukraine, like we say with those Nazis. So
all right, my sister. You have a blessed day. Yeah. You have a good weekend. Okay?
You too. You have a blessed weekend too.
All right. Peace to you. Okay. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahadie. Abibi Fahadie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a good weekend, family. Be safe. Peace.